This is the story. The amazing story of a woman who made a great contribution to mankind because she liked her coffee strong. And you'll hear another story. The story of a brilliant career that was launched because a traveler missed his train. This is the story. Mrs. Clements slammed the door. She slammed it so violently that the whole house trembled. But not only the house, the members of her family trembled also. For they knew from long experience the meaning of this ominous sound. They stopped in the midst of their morning preparations. Mr. Clements was shaving, the children dressing for school. And they peered at each other from the doorways of their various rooms, and on the brow of each there was a troubled frown. Mother, they murmured, was angry. Mother had not yet had her 3 cups of black coffee. But why not? Usually by this time her coffee had been brewed, and she'd gulped it down, burning and bitter, and peace had come to her troubled spirit. Why not this morning? Could it be, the Clements family shuddered at the thought, could it be that there was no coffee in the house? They would have known how right, how tragically right their guess was if they could have seen her at that moment. She had swept like a hurricane across the field to her neighbor's house and stood on the back porch, pounding mercilessly at her neighbor's door. At last it opened, and Mrs. Clements, in a voice hoarse with thirst and irritation, demanded the loan of a 1/2 pound of coffee. Her fool of a husband, she said, had forgot to bring some home. There wasn't a drop for breakfast. And even as her neighbor must have heard, she was a woman who loved her coffee. Yes, her neighbor had heard, for who in the environment of the village of Durham had not? But with a look of sorrow and something akin to fear, he murmured apologetically,
"Well, I'm afraid we ain't got any either, Mrs. Clements. Me and the missus swore off drinking it a couple of weeks ago."
And then quickly, discreetly, he closed the door. It was good he did, for now Mrs. Clements' wrath was a thing to behold. Swore off drinking it, indeed. What self-respecting human being, what human being in his right mind could swear off drinking coffee? Muttering under her breath, she stalked down the stairs and stormed back across the field. Now she knew her plight was desperate. For this was the only neighbor within 3 miles, and the store in the village would not be open for another hour. As for waiting that hour, it was inconceivable. She had already waited too long. If she did not have her coffee soon, she'd... Abruptly, there in midfield, Mrs. Clements stopped. She bent down among the weeds and wild flowers, and there was something she plucked and held close to her face and scrutinized carefully. And then a sly smile spread across her lips, and in her eyes there was a look of triumph. A moment later, holding the ends of her apron together, she re-entered her house. Quickly, she let her mysterious burden fall on the table. And then, as a miser reaches for a precious gem, Mrs. Clements reached for her coffee mill. On that particular morning, Mr. Clements and the children came down late for breakfast. They were in no hurry to face the violent storm that they were sure awaited them. And even when they did appear, it was on tiptoe and with every nerve taut. But to their relief and unbounded amazement, they found the head of their house sitting quietly at the kitchen table, smiling fondly at them and sipping a strange-smelling brew. It was only when he caught the odor, when he had cast a glance into the cup, that Mr. Clements exclaimed,
"Blimey, what in the name of heaven do you call that?"
"That," his wife explained, "was a new kind of coffee, a coffee that grew in their own backyard, one that she had discovered and that they would use henceforth. If the family would take their places in the dining room, she would be only too happy to serve their breakfast." And the family, who knew better than to argue, who were grateful for anything that would calm the lady's spirits, grouped themselves around the dining room table and said grace that morning with even more than their usual fervor. A few moments later, Mrs. Clements brought the trays filled with eggs from their own barnyard chickens, with ham from their own pig that had been slaughtered just last week, and above all, with cups of steaming coffee, coffee from their own backyard. Mr. Clements was the first to try it. Gingerly, he raised his cup. A hot, fiery smell tore at his nostrils. He would have set it down again, but the eyes of his wife were upon him, and so bravely he drank.
Blimey!
He tried with all his strength to restrain that cough, but how could he? There was fire in his throat. There was fire in the very pit of his stomach. Mrs. Clements rose from her chair. Was he trying to insinuate that the coffee was too strong? Didn't he know by this time that coffee should be strong? If he was too weak, too puny, too spineless to appreciate it, that was his misfortune. As for herself, she was satisfied. From now on, this was the coffee that would be served in the Clements household. And her husband, wiping his streaming eyes, acquiesced.
I'll learn to like it, I'm sure.
But swiftly he dug his fork into a piece of ham. Ham was his favorite food. Ham would take the bitter, burning taste away. He shoved a sizable portion into his mouth. He chewed for a second, but only for a second. And then he uttered a gasp of amazement.
Wait a minute. I must have spilled some of your coffee on me ham. And it tastes good. It tastes mighty good. I think I've made a discovery, too.
And so indeed he had. A discovery for which succeeding generations have been increasingly grateful. No one else since Mrs. Clements' day has brewed coffee from the plant which she plucked in her backyard, but millions have found another use for it. For you see, that plant bore bright yellow flowers, and inside the flowers were black seeds, seeds which Mrs. Clements thought should be ground in a coffee mill. But which today are pounded to a paste and used as a condiment throughout the world. A condiment that bears the name of mustard. This is the story. It was the 4:20 to Tulsa that had just pulled out of the station. The young man at the telegrapher's desk inside the shack watched it go. Watched it with bitter, brooding eyes. Watched it and murmured, "Good riddance." As gathering steam, it vanished around the bend. Not that the young man had anything in particular against the 4:20 to Tulsa. It was all trains that he hated, and all railroad stations, and all tracks and telegrams and passengers, and everything that had anything to do with being a telegrapher in a small town in Oklahoma. Station door opened, and the young man, his mind still on his troubles, on his boredom, and his frustrated ambitions, mechanically raised his eyes. Toward him across the waiting room came a man with a bag, a strangely familiar figure. He'd met him on the square, perhaps, or in the general store. Man pressed his face against the grill. Then a troubled voice inquired,
Son, that train there, that wasn't the 4:20 to Tulsa, was it?
The young man nodded. This man was, like himself, too slow even to catch a train. Another slow and easy-going Oklahoman.
Doggone. I guess my watch must have been slow. Will you hand me one of them train schedules, son? I gotta get a Tulsa sometime tonight.
So the young man handed him a schedule, and the stranger ambled over to a bench and sat down and began to study it with a furrowed brow. For a moment, the telegrapher watched him. Then he yawned and turned away. He was tired of brooding on his problems. He was bored with being bored. He did what he always did when he was in such a state as this. He did the one thing that always seemed to help. Almost without thinking, he began to hum a song. It was a ballad, a folk ballad of the Old West. He'd learned it long ago, and he'd sung it often. Once even he'd been paid for singing it. That was when the medicine show, Field's Marvelous Medicine Show it was called, had come to town and had hired local talent. And all the villagers had shouted their approval and had stamped their feet, and afterward had slapped him on the back and told him how great he was. He ought to be on the stage, they said. Well, heaven knows he wanted to be. But what was their judgment worth? How could he trust their opinion? Certainly could never trust his own. So he'd gone back to being a railroad telegrapher. Here he was, still stuck in Sapulpa. What a name, Sapulpa, and still dreaming big dreams. The song died at last on his lips, and only then did he notice that the stranger was at the grill again, staring at him curiously. But there was nothing curious in what he said.
Looks like I ain't gonna reach Tulsa tonight. Maybe I better send a telegram. Give me a blank there, will you, son?
The young man handed him a blank. The stranger's familiar face bent over it thoughtfully, and then, as if apropos of nothing, carelessly, he said,
What are you going to do with that voice of yours, son?
To which the young man replied that he wasn't going to do anything except sing in the local choir, perhaps. What else was there to do? And the stranger, scribbling on the telegram blank, said,
You ought to be in show business. You're good.
The telegrapher smiled ironically. Another compliment that meant nothing, he thought. Another piece of flattery from one who didn't know, who couldn't possibly distinguish good from bad. And for want of something better to say, the young man asked the stranger if he thought it was easy to move from a small town in Oklahoma to Broadway. And the stranger, handing back the blank, replied with a twinkle in his eye,
Can be done, son. It can be done. Now, would you mind reading that back to me, just so I know that you can make it out?
The young man read. It was easy enough to make out. The stranger could not reach Tulsa that night. He would be there at noon tomorrow. They should hold up the rehearsal until his arrival. Rehearsal? The telegrapher's eyes opened wide. And then, an instant later, as he read the signature at the bottom, they opened wider still. And he uttered a gasp of amazement and disbelief, and then he stammered.
Well, sure. That's who you are. Well, I should have recognized you right away. Holy smoke, Will Rogers.
Yes, Will Rogers. He who had left a small town in Oklahoma and ended up on Broadway. This was the stranger who admired the young man's singing, who told him he should be in show business. No wonder that moment was a turning point of the young man's life. No wonder he ceased to doubt himself and to question the judgment of his neighbors. Before the year had ended, he was in New York. And within another year, he had moved on to Hollywood, and his feet were on the path that were to lead to unparalleled fame and fortune. For that young man, whose career began with a chance meeting in a railroad station, was to become the most popular Western star the movies have ever known. The singing cowboy, whose golden voice has endeared him to the hearts of millions, Gene Autry. This is the story.